Casting the Runes, written by M.R. James, narrated by B.J. Harrison. April 15th, 190 blank.
Dear sir, I am requested by the Council of the Blank Association to return to you the draft of a paper on the truth of alchemy, which you have been good enough to offer to read at our forthcoming meeting, and to inform you that the Council do not see their way to including it in the programme. I am yours faithfully, Blank Secretary.
April 18th.
Dear sir, I am sorry to say that my engagements do not permit of my affording you an interview on the subject of your proposed paper, nor do our laws allow of your discussing the matter with a committee of our council, as you suggest. Please allow me to assure you that the fullest consideration was given to the draft which you submitted, and that it was not declined without having been referred to the judgment of a most competent authority. No personal question, it can hardly be necessary for me to add, can have had the slightest influence on the decision of the council. Believe me, ut supra.
April 20th.
Secretary of the Blank Association begs respectfully to inform Mr. Carswell that it is impossible for him to communicate the name of any person or persons to whom the draft of Mr. Carswell's paper may have been submitted, and further desires to intimate that he cannot undertake to reply to any further letters on this subject.
"And who is Mr. Carswell?"
inquired the secretary's wife. She had called at his office, and perhaps unwarrantably, had picked up the last of these three letters, which the typist had just brought in.
"Why, my dear, just at present Mr. Carswell is a very angry man. But I don't know much about him otherwise, except that he is a person of wealth, his address is Lufford Abbey, Warwickshire, and he's an alchemist, apparently, and wants to tell us all about it. And that's about all, except that I don't want to meet him for the next week or two. Now, if you're ready to leave this place, I am."
"What have you been doing to make him angry?"
asked Mrs. Secretary.
"The usual thing, my dear, the usual thing. He sent in a draft of a paper he wanted to read at the next meeting, and we referred it to Edward Dunning, almost the only man in England who knows about these things, and he said it was perfectly hopeless, so we declined it. So Carswell has been pelting me with letters ever since. The last thing he wanted was the name of the man we referred his nonsense to, and you saw my answer to that. But don't you say anything about it, for goodness sake."
"I should think not, indeed. Did I ever do such a thing? I do hope, though, he won't get to know that it was poor Mr. Dunning."
"Poor Mr. Dunning? I don't know why you call him that. He's a very happy man, is Dunning. Lots of hobbies and a comfortable home, and all his time to himself."
"I only meant I should be sorry for him if this man got hold of his name and came and bothered him."
"Oh, ah, yes. I dare say he would be poor Mr. Dunning then."
The secretary and his wife were lunching out, and the friends to whose house they were bound were Warwickshire people. So Mrs. Secretary had already settled it in her own mind that she would question them judiciously about Mr. Carswell. But she was saved the trouble of leading up to the subject, for the hostess said, to the host, before many minutes had passed,
"I saw the Abbot of Lufford this morning."
The host whistled. "Did you? What in the world brings him up to town?"
"Goodness knows, he was coming out of the British Museum gate as I drove past."
It was not that unnatural that Mrs. Secretary should inquire whether this was a real abbot who was being spoken of.
"Oh, no, my dear, only a neighbour of ours in the country who bought Lufford Abbey a few years ago. His real name is Carswell."
"Is he a friend of yours?"
asked Mr. Secretary with a private wink to his wife. The question let loose a torrent of declamation. There was really nothing to be said for Mr. Carswell. Nobody knew.